Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Not sure if you can hear us. Hold on one moment. How nice. Our Blog Talk Radio podcast started right as they're doing an emergency testing system in our school.
In the event of an actual emergency.
Didn't quite plan on this. Talk about the intro. I'm going to go check to see if we're live.
All right. Well, we are live here in Blog Talk Radio for the Including Samuel discussion. My name is Dr. Denny. I am a faculty member at Ashland University, and tonight's discussion is going to be about inclusion, and it's going to cover the film Including Samuel, as well as the Dan Habib TED Talk. Lots of themes were within that film, including families, inclusion, civil rights, cures, etc. We're still having some issues here as far as the emergency system at the University of Akron. We are live from the University of Akron's campus, Central Howard Building.
I'm Dr. Daviso. I just checked, and we are live on the air. How exciting. A little bit of my background. I've taught Intro to Exceptionalities and all types of courses related to educating kids with special needs for the last 15 years. Had a lot of experience working with them in transitional settings, and it's fun to be able to co-teach with a friend and coworker, Dr. Denny.
It's very exciting. We've done many presentations throughout the country. The latest one was in Oregon. Technology was the theme of that one, and apps. I teach a wide variety of classes at Ashland University, introduction, transition, behavior, assessment. And so we've got kids that are in my two introduction to exceptionalities classes and some kids from my assessment class if they can make it. And so we're just kind of waiting on some callers, but we can jabber on for a little while if you...
Absolutely. Feel free to call in. We won't know exactly, you know, who you are because we don't have caller ID here, or maybe we do. I'll give you a little bit of background on my experience with inclusion, and it works in many different ways. If you go back to the video, including Samuel, some of the students in that situation had very severe and, you know, moderate to intensive needs, and including those students often I see is as a substitute for the actual functional skills they're going to need. And I think if you're going to do inclusion, it should be focused on those students' goals, not just inclusion for inclusion's sake. It's going to take some work.
We both have a background in transition, and one of the biggest things that we focus on in transition is the real world and making sure that our students that have significant disabilities have the skills necessary to participate in the world as best they can. So if that means functional academics, so be it. If that means I'm a big believer in community experiences, and then go back to the classroom and work on those experiences. I have a background. I was a former ED teacher, emotional problems, and it was a self-contained environment. And for my kids, it was a place that they felt safe and that they could come to me with their problems, et cetera. And that model worked for them. We would try to get them out as best we could. We worked on socialization skills. Every fourth period, we had a class. We teamed up with the kids with the more significant disabilities. And it was a nice model for us. And so every model is going to end up being a little bit different. You can't put one size fits all in terms of a district. You have to assess what's going on. And apply the specific needs to your district and building.
Yeah, I think that's a critical skill for any practicing teacher, is to be able to adapt to the needs of your students and supplement it with the environment that you have. My students would, when we talk about inclusion, it's not just within schools. Dr. Denny made a great point that this needs to take place in the community. Our students need to be prepared to be able to go out there and function as independently as possible. So we'll see. We're still messing around with the technology. Hopefully you can hear us. Maybe we'll get a caller here and there. We don't have any prizes to give away. Maybe, you know, someday it'll be like the 10th caller. Get a free copy of IDEA.
Yes, our next adventure, we will get some gongs and some bells and some whistles and some songs. And we'll talk about lots of different topics. So, alrighty. Well, that's great. Another theme that was within that film was families, and families being the therapist, being the teacher, all of those kinds of things. And I think that is a an interesting variable, and it comes out pretty strongly that the parents of Samuel wanted to be his parent, not his therapist, not his teacher. And that's a tough call. So,
yeah. And depending on what variables the family have, what do they have access to, will help them better determine how are they going to, I don't see parents as needing to be therapists, but they need to be informed practitioners on how they can better advocate for their child, how they can make things more accessible for their child. So there's going to be education, not only just for the student, but for the family in general. Learning to navigate all the different laws and requirements of IDEA takes time. And it's important for parents to make sure they're in the mix, making sure they're making the right choices and informed choices for their child.
We have a caller.
All right, Kyle, let's see what you got. Welcome to our show. What questions do you have for us?
Yeah, my question is in dealing with the parents, do you get a lot of pushback when it's time to transition in after school? Like the parents may not feel they're ready to be.
That's a great question.
That's a fantastic question. As far as pushback goes, a lot of times it will vary with, as long as your goals and the parents' goals are on the, let's call it the same page, they are much more willing to work with you. When it comes to parents that may have expectations that differ from the expectations of the classroom, that's where problems are really going to occur. I've had nothing but, I'd say 90% of my experiences with parents have been fantastic. Working together just to provide, you know, an after-school job, working to help them get ready for independent living. Your thoughts?
It definitely depends upon the parent and where they are as being a parent for an individual with a disability. And so if they're a parent that doesn't allow their kid to experience things and kind of has the fear of them going out into the real world and doing those kinds of things, then it could be problematic. But then you have parents that I had one parent who's her son had Down syndrome, but he didn't even know he had Down syndrome. And she raised him, and she wanted nothing to do with functional academics whatsoever. She wanted him to be included in every single aspect. And my training, et cetera, was it was tough at first, but I get it. So you have to approach every family, every parent on an individual basis. And
right.
Meet them half, you know, meet them. But I agree with Dr. Davis. I mean, the majority of time that I worked in primarily middle school. And so our big thing was transitioning to the high school level. So I did 1 year of the high school, but.
And I'm primarily scared of middle schoolers. So I went directly to high school.
Right.
I do not. seventh and eighth graders, you guys, good luck. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I mean, I'm just not set up. I am very excited when I'm working with my seniors and getting them ready to take that next step into a larger world and start taking them into the community, getting them jobs, getting them hooked up with the desperately needed services that are gonna need to be in place upon graduation. So,
hey, how's our sound quality anyway?
It's good. It's very good. I mean,
is it really?
You guys, great. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Excellent.
Well, all right. Well,
what
thank
other
you
questions?
So much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Did we answer your question?
You did. Yeah. You know what? Another thing though is, how do you? I mean, from what I see in the schools, I mean, there are kids. Some parents completely know how to navigate the system and will have a ton of resources. And then other parents, I mean, it's like, yeah. I mean, every day they're just fishing, you know? So how do you, you know, connect them with where they need to go?
You have to know your local community. You have to know specific people that are going to be in, RSC services, Social Security, all of these, you have to have the ability to hand that information out to the parents. And what they do with it, it is what now, but they have to have that information.
Right.
And we start with the last presentation I just did at O'Cali, we talk about a seamless transition where elementary school teachers, middle school teachers, and high school teachers all begin to share information to help parents navigate through this system. Hopefully that helps.
Okay. All righty. Hey, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Okay.
That's awesome.
All right. You're our second caller. What can we do for
second
you?
Second caller.
What questions do you have for us today?
I had a question in regards to community experiences I know that you have both discussed the importance of community experiences. And I know you both said that your experience is more with working with, you know, middle school and high school students. But can you describe some examples of community experiences for the younger children, the more elementary age children?
Oh, absolutely. Having them begin to navigate, one of the best places I like to take my students for activities, and this is just a free plug for the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. If the school you're working in receives Title I funds, and by my guess, they all do, and you have students with special needs, you are able to get free passes into the zoo for that in the rainforest. And I like that. It's an inclusive environment, but it's also a very safe environment. When you think about all the different protective barriers that are in place, not just for, you know, the animals that are in care, but also for the visitors, it's very easy. We work on map skills. They can even order food there. They can begin to learn to use the new technology they have to get information from, on all the different exhibits there. And
the business, the BEN, which I'm forgetting what the E, Business Education Network is, was an organization in Akron in which they provided guest speakers for classes, also tours of different job sites and for kids so they can go check out, you know, this particular let's go to the peanut butter factory. We're going to go to the paper mill. We're going to, you know, those kinds of things. And so the more you can give them those kinds of experiences, and this was like a network that all these businesses came together. And so we were able to incorporate that in lots of classrooms in Akron.
In this area, some of the businesses that I've taken my students to, unfortunately, are closed. Schwabel's used to be a great one.
Oh, yeah.
Because the end of the tour with like free bread, teachers got a free knife.
Okay.
I don't think that would really work really well in today's schools. But if you're from the Summit, Portage, Medina County region, Harry London's Chocolates over by the Akron Canton Airport offers tours for $1. And the best time to go is actually right about now, right after Valentine's Day, because they give away a ton of candy real cheap, and kids get to see and interact with workers there. They get to see how the candy's made. And, hey, it's one of their favorite subjects.
Candy.
Yeah. So pretty much
candy. I'm sure.
I'm going to have to put a plug in with my buddy Pelkin out.
So, yeah, it's anything else that would get kids motivated. A lot of them get taken to the police station, fire stations. They're starting to explore careers there. But then again, also learning how to ask for help in case of emergencies. Wherever you can infuse career readiness skills, and so they're ready to make an informed decision on what they want to do when they grow up.
Awesome.
It's also about the skills that they're learning in when it comes to homework and monitoring their behavior. Those set the foundation. Late elementary, middle school years completely set the foundation, the soft skills for later in life in terms of academics, in terms of work-related, what's the word I'm thinking?
Yeah, you're looking at the soft skills that are critically needed for employment. Most of the students that I've had that may have lost a job, it's never because they weren't able to complete the task. It was usually a social skill related to it. So building those social skills early is key.
All right.
That's great. That's why I'm glad to hear that there are this many resources available at the younger level, like you said, to build those soft skills prior to getting into middle school, even high school.
Excellent.
With transition being at 14 now, it's imperative that districts and families, et cetera, are going to have to start looking at this stuff. So awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Great. Thank
Great.
You.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Sorry about that wait.
One minute wait time. All right. What questions do you
Good
have
evening.
Us regarding anything?
Good evening.
I actually wanted to add in a little bit based upon you were talking about community resources. I have the distinct advantage of being not only the parent of a child with disabilities and having worked the system, but also now I work in the school district, and I'll, try to help navigate for parents as well, those community resources. I'm very blessed. I work at a 5th, 6th grade level where our students with disabilities do go out in the community at least once, if not twice a month. They go to different locations within the community, which is really great. They expose them to different things like ordering in a restaurant and going out to different resources that the kids would need to be familiar with later on in life. And into our high school level, my son actually had the ability of going out even to our local hospital and helping work in the cafeteria there, going to different restaurants, helping work there. Our district works really hard in trying to, look at those future needs for a lot of our kids. We also, I would suggest if you can connect with your community board of disabilities, they also have a huge amount of resources and contacts that you can, work with them in terms of trying to find some connections. Our county is very blessed. In Butler County, we have actually a student to adult life transition. We call it the SALT group. And these parents come in and we have speakers and they talk about all aspects of life as the kids are transitioning from that student to adult, part of their life. And it's been a huge advantage for our family to have those resources at our fingertips. It's very overwhelming when you're coming in. And so I really try to utilize that and all, as the nurse in the school, I try to get out all of that information whenever I can. Whatever I get, I try to forward on to my parents.
No, that's a great avenue. And my experience with the as a classroom teacher, my parents always talked. There was always a pretty tight-knit community, and this was in a urban district. I don't know if that happens in other areas. I would assume it does, because I'd see the parents when I volunteered in the Challenger League baseball. I'd see my students over and over run into the same sets of parents. So, and hopefully a lot of that information gets shared. That's really great. So you have those programs in Butler County.
Yeah, it has been a huge advantage. And it is difficult for parents who aren't on board yet. You know, they're either too overwhelmed with the process where they can't, you know, navigate or feel comfortable navigating, or they haven't quite gotten to the point of, you know, acknowledging what services their kids need. And, you know, I watch my teachers that, you know, try to walk them through that process, you know, because it is very overwhelming. So I hope to try to be an asset to them as well as to my parents by, you know, giving them firsthand knowledge as well as, you know, whatever I can connect them with throughout the community. So
that's great.
How much trouble have you had in terms of dealing with your local district as far as services?
I had more issues, I think, when Philip started. He was in second grade when we mainstreamed him into the school. He was partial inclusion at that point. It was.
I am going to post this on. If you don't want to use names, that's fine.
Oh no, that's okay.
Okay, good.
We had him partial inclusion, so he would go out to the resource room during you know, those math and language parts that he needed in those classes. When he went to our middle, well, we call it our intermediate building, which is where I work now. It's a 5th-6th grade building currently, and he was in a more of an ED team, an educational disability team, where he was with other kids, but where he still was pretty high functioning and had, you know, a little bit of difficulty with language processing. He still got a lot of the content and it was just trying to get it back out. And I felt a little frustrated at the end of those 2 years because I just didn't feel they had him working at a level that I thought was good for him. So I actually homeschooled him for 3 years, trying to find out where his strengths were and pulling up his Lexile scores and really working with him one-on-one. And then I went back to work and put him back in as a freshman. In our district, our freshmen are in one building, and then they transition into the high school for the last 3 years. And by being in that one building with just one class was a really good transition step for him. So that 5th-6th grade level, I had a really difficult time just, and it wasn't so much the fault of his teachers because, unfortunately, they had personal issues the first year. His teacher's husband passed away in the spring, and in the second year, his teacher had a really difficult pregnancy, and so she was out a lot of the spring. So, you know, I just felt that due to the circumstances, I needed to step in and do something for him, you know, on a personal note to try to help bring him up. So I don't want to say I lost confidence in the system then, but I just felt I had a much better pulse on my kids so I could do better for him. But then his high school career, he did really well. He was very comfortable coming back in. You know, he still had a modified curriculum, but he did really, really well. And he graduated with honors, and he was very proud of himself, you know. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's a good success story, especially, you know, being able to navigate all the different services, all the different programs, and, you know, being able to find basically a good fit between, you know, a child needs in their education. It's going to take a lot of creativity on educators' part, and it's going to have to involve the community. I like that.
Yes, and if people in their area have a Project Search or a Project Life program, definitely, you know, recommend those to parents because those were a nice transition step from the academic in high school into the workforce, which now he's 22 and he's currently working in a job in the community, and he is doing very well. I mean, it's not a, like, taxing job in the sense. I mean, he basically works at a chicken processing plant, and he packs, or not packs boxes so much as helps stack the boxes and things. But he makes a fairly decent wage at that. I mean, it's over $10 an hour, and he communicates with the people that he works with. He's socially trying to, you know, work with them and learn those cues and things like that. He has a job coach if needed when they check on him periodically now that he's gotten established in it, you know. So we've been blessed, but it, from a parent perspective, it has taken a huge amount of work.
Dr. Davidson and I both worked through Kent State, and we had a program where we received our master's, and we were job coaches for kids in the community. It's a compact there, Stowe, Falls, Talmadge, Hudson, et cetera, and they have jobs on Kent State's campus. And so that model is a little bit different than the Project Search model. And the Project Search model is that they're trying to, they'll be at a hospital or at a college or something like that, but they're going to try to get them a
right.
job there, utilizing you know, all the different adult service agencies. Where we were at Kent, we had job sites for these kids, and so they would work at these job sites, but they weren't getting jobs there because that was our training ground. We had unpaid and paid employment there at Kent State, and it's still going on today. So where's the Project Search?
It's a great program.
Where is the Project Search near you?
We have it through our Butler Tech, which is the Butler County Technical College, and they run the program. Project Life is they have different businesses throughout the community where the kids go, and they rotate through the year in terms of job sites. And then as Project Search, they're into just the one job site. My son went up to Atrium Hospital in Middletown, but he rotated through the hospital in different jobs depending upon
right.
what his interests were for the year. But he stayed at that one site for the entire year.
Right.
And some of the kids who worked at that site were offered jobs at that site. We just did not live locally enough that we felt that would benefit us, so we looked elsewhere.
I've been to the Project Search at Parma City Hospital, and they had some pretty significant, they had some really good jobs there for these kids. I mean,
oh, yeah.
These kids were data entry and working with some of the medications and stuff like that. I mean, it was definitely pushing the envelope, which I thought was fabulous. It wasn't just food, salt, and flowers. So,
yes, it definitely was challenging. So, and I don't want to monopolize any more of the conversation, because I'm sure there's other people who probably want to.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. All right, we were talking about inclusion and how this works at the elementary level. So we had a particular expert call in. I'll tell you, it's my wife, and she's going to talk a little bit about how this worked at the fifth, sixth grade intermediate level, the things she did to implement inclusion practices and get other teachers on board to work with their students. Turn it over to you.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
So hi. I had fifth and sixth graders. Sometimes we would have seventh, and sometimes we would have a fourth grader. And we did inclusion in usually two content areas. So we would do always language arts, and then the other area would be social studies and science. And when I first started, we did one or the other. And then as I progressed and learned and how things could be different, we found it was better to switch it up and do some science. And it just depends on who you're working with. The particular teachers that I worked with did science for a grading period, and so, and then the next grading period we did social studies, and then flipped that way. So that worked out nice to give us a variety and well-rounded experience. I was fortunate and worked with two amazing teachers from Gen Ed that were fantastic with including our students and making it feel like we were just a part of the class. And we would work on modifications for the lessons, and then it honestly got to the point where they would just say to me, hey, here's what I'm thinking, and I'd go, perfect. So it takes a lot of time in the beginning, but it's worth it once you put that time in and build those relationships, and everyone kind of gets on board on what's expected and how things can work well. Does that help?
Another topic that was brought up that's, you know, related to inclusion was also getting the parents involved and getting the, you know, working with parents to make sure they are, you know, they're prepared to make the transition from, you know, intermediate school to middle school to high school. Were there any barriers or any issues you had with parents during your time working in the classroom?
Yes, they never want to make the transition, as with anyone. And that's what we would talk about. Nobody wants to change. And many times they would say, oh, can't my daughter or son just stay with you for the rest of their school career? And, you know, it's very flattering, but no, they cannot. So change has to happen. So you are responsible and able to help the parents through that. And obviously it varies from group to group, but a lot of times we just try to provide some activities to help ease that tension and stress. And some of those would be, we would include middle school, either way. Like I would go down to the lower grade and be a part of those IEP meetings and transition discussions before it happens. And then vice versa, my parents would go to the middle school. And we would do tours with parents. We would do tours with just students. We would do tours together. We made, we call them transition books. So we would make a book of pictures and classrooms and things that they would see at their new school with, depending on the level of the student, some would have, you know, a lot of description of words. Some would have a couple words. Things like that, and that was given to the students at the end of the year to transition them to the next year, and again, that was individualized. So some students would do really well with that at the beginning of summer and going over it and over it, and then other students, it would be a better fit to introduce that in late August, right before starting your new school. So you just really had to individualize even how you're transitioning parents and students from grade level to grade level.
Very good. Well, we won't keep you because I know you have to, you know, get a really good dinner going tonight. But any short, quick advice for pre-service teachers on, you know, being a good advocate for your kids? Any suggestions?
Get a lot of Band-Aids.
Right. I would say to I found this very helpful when I was in school that one of our professors talked about having a spiel kind of on hand in your head and kind of practice that, because you do, believe it or not, still run in to barriers and teachers that are not willing to work with your students. And you do run into those things like why, especially for moderate to intensive needs, why are your kids even here? And those kind of things. Why are they even a part of my gen ed class? I don't understand. So I found that very helpful to kind of have a spiel on hand, and then you could just kind of pull from that. And then you kind of, as the years and experience continues, that comes very naturally for you. So I found that very helpful, and to not be afraid to speak up and advocate, and that's what you're there for. And you'll find the majority of the teachers and staff will support you. It's really just those few that are kind of like everyone can relate anywhere you work. There's the few that are negative, and so you can do your best to turn them around, but you may never. But, you know, all you can do is just advocate and do the best you can for your kids.
Because we're all human beings, and we deserve everything that the school has to offer.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Do you carry your soapbox? Because I have a soapbox that I keep in my pocket. And I get on that soapbox all the time. It's a little one, and I don't know if it's a blow up, so I don't know exactly what it is, but I can get on a soapbox when it comes to that and the civil rights and all of that kind of stuff, and it really irritates me when kids with disabilities are not allowed in for whatever reason, you know.
Right, because you would think that in this day and age that wouldn't still occur, but it does. Well, and I had a kind of a unique situation. My unit of students with multiple disabilities was brand new at my school, and I started that unit. So that was a lot of it. Again, it's a lot of educating and a lot of positive experiences. And for me, I really thought it was beneficial for my students. Don't hide in your classroom. Get out. And so we would do a lot of social connections and school jobs and just getting out and being seen and being a part of the school community. And that really helped to bring some of those negative feelings and teacher attitudes around. And then what works great is, especially the younger students, I think it's definitely easier for younger students. The students are awesome. The others, you know, typical students, so they're very accepting and want to be a part. And, you know, and so that kind of, I think the teachers could see that too. Like, oh, well, the kids aren't bothered by that. Why should I be? So,
do you think it's fear?
Kind of
do you think it's fear in terms of teachers?
Yes, absolutely. And a lack of experience,
mm-hmm.
I think, many a times, especially with students with multiple disabilities, but really with any disabilities. I think it's lack of experience. I think they're afraid they're going to look dumb. Like, they don't know what to do. They feel uncomfortable. So I'll just either make a joke, I'll say something insensitive, I'll just ignore it. You know, all those things we all naturally do when you come into a new situation. So you can help advocate and make that an easier transition by making some kind of connection. Oh, you know, Mr. Jones, did you know Tommy really likes basketball? Have you guys talked about that? Oh, yeah, I love this basketball. University of Akron's playing Friday, blah, blah, blah. So just start those connections and realize they're just another student in your class.
Exactly. I remember one of my first kids hit Down syndrome at Kent State, and he was working me over. And because I didn't know, I had no idea. And this kid was manipulating me to no end. And it finally clicked, and I'm like, man, you know, this dude. And that's when I was done. I'm like, all right, enough of your shenanigans because you have a disability.
Right. Oh, my gosh, are you kidding? All of my students, that was part of the teaching for the typical students was, hey, just so you know, if you're going to offer to do the work for them, oh, they're going to let you do that in a second.
Oh, yeah.
You know, oh, you can't, oh, I'll write it for you.
Oh.
And, of course, they're like, sure, go ahead.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's part of the teaching, too, is teaching the students what's okay and how to feel comfortable and when to ask questions. And I would always tell the students, too, and if you're not comfortable, I'm not going to force you. I'm not going to pair you up with one of my students and say, okay, go in the hall, see how it goes. No, you know, you have to teach also and model and help with that peer tutoring and what's appropriate and how to respond. And if they touch your book and keep flipping through your pages, then you tell them, hands to yourself, you know, all those things. It's all a teaching and learning process for everyone, really, all year long.
And you get the teachers that do it on purpose, too. The teachers that purposely will not want to work with a student. So then the good teachers end up getting all the kids. And the teachers that don't want to work with them, which they are perfectly capable of doing so, do it on, you know, push back. And so then they end up not getting the kids with it. Because I wouldn't hand off my kids to the teacher that doesn't like them and doesn't want to work with them. So, you know, the people that did want to work with them ended up with all the kids with the disabilities, and that's
right. And then they get burnt out. So
totally.
That's where you got to be careful because, I know. But then you're right. It's like, ugh, you don't want them to go into so and so's class because you know they yell at them, or they, or they're disrespectful, or they're this, that, and the other. So it's difficult. That is definitely difficult. It's, I think especially more for ED, but that's a difficult situation. Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, I thank you for taking the time to give a teacher's perspective. And, you know, if we run out of callers again on our next show, we'll probably be calling you back again.
Right.
I'm a repeat visitor to the show. You, wonderful. Yay.
You're going to be a regular, lady.
I'm a regular. Yay. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
No, I definitely think that there really are still barriers in place. They're getting better. But in my experience, using any type of inclusionary practice, I would take my students at the high school level to football games. I attended homecoming with them because I had to. My favorite part was I'd take them to a football game at night and I would drive them there with the permission of the parents, and we kind of had an evening of it. But then all of a sudden people would come running up going, Hey, David, so you know your kids are over at the concession stand. I'm like, yeah, because they're getting something to eat, you know, because they think that they need to be monitored or watched or have their hand held 24/7 when they're going to need to have these experiences on being independent, on being able to purchase items, going to the movies, whatever it might be. So it's going to take, you know, a creative teacher with a passion for serving kids with disabilities to really make an impact.
Heaven forbid you let the kids with behavior problems out of your room and actually like work throughout the building, sweeping and delivering papers and all of those kinds of things. And let me tell you, that those kids that with all the, I had every single job in that school, and those kids took pride in that school. And were the first people, they wouldn't destroy that school. They'd be the first kids that would tell another kid to knock it off and not throw that paper on the floor, all those kinds of things. And that was part of the inclusion. Yeah, they're in the ED room, but they're also part of the building, and they took ownership of that building. So, yeah. And a couple of them are married now, and I went to their weddings.
Now that's full inclusion.
Yeah, exactly. All right, where's our chime?
I don't know. I think we're about to wrap things up here with the call lines have gone quite cold.
Cool.
But we'll make sure we're better prepared for the our next broadcast. We'll be trying to bring in more. I think this went okay.
Guest speakers.
We'll bring in more guest speakers based on whatever topic we decide to tackle in 2 weeks. But for now, this is us signing off.
Ding, dang, dong.
All right. Have a good night.
Thank you. I think that one.